This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome in to SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show on this Friday night. We have got another outstanding lineup coming your way over the next 2 hours. And here in studio to help us kick things off is my good friend from SB Nation. That is Joe George, who is going to be providing the helping hand on a couple of segments. I want to get his thoughts first and foremost on Chris Paul, the addition to the Rockets.
Yeah, I think it's a great move for the Houston Rockets and what they're trying to build towards right now. I don't think it's anything of a drop-off for Patrick Beverley defensively. I mean, I think Chris Paul's one of the best defenders. We saw that be awarded in the all-defensive teams. He was on, I believe, the second team, and that's a guy who leads the league in steals almost every year. So this is a great addition for the Rockets, and I know there's a large concern about how you have two ball-dominant players in James Harden and Chris Paul on the same roster, but if they've talked and they believe it's going to work, then I believe it's going to work. I didn't think James Harden would work at point guard. It worked pretty well until the playoffs. So I think this is a huge upgrade. And the one thing I think Rockets fans should appreciate is, if anything, they're trying. Like, they're going all in to win. And not all teams are doing that. More teams are tanking than trying to win. So at least they're trying to win and do it in a different way.
You think Harden should have won the MVP?
Nope. I think it was Russell Westbrook's.
You do? Okay.
Just because I think if you take Russell Westbrook off that roster, I think they probably have the number one pick in the NBA draft. I think if you take James Harden off the Rockets roster, they probably still miss the playoffs, but they're just not as bad. To me, what Russell Westbrook, the numbers he put up, they were incredible. We haven't seen them in so long. And James Harden had a great season, but it just wasn't just bad luck. He should be a two-time MVP. But Steph Curry had an incredible year, and Russell Westbrook had an incredible year when James Harden should have won it both times. But, no, I think they got that one right.
Okay, so as we look ahead to the 2017-2018 season, James Harden, Chris Paul, that's a stout backcourt. Mm-hmm. How good are they going to be?
You know, it just depends on what else they can add. They quickly made, like, five trades, like literally like three or four trades to add guys so they can make some moves. If they can go out and get a Taj Gibson, if they can get a J.J. Redick, or they can make a bigger splash and get a Paul George or Carmelo Anthony, then I think they could surely be the second seed. And then, to me, they're an injury away from being in the NBA Finals.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
As promised in our next segment at SB Nation Radio, it is time to go around the horn with some Astros talk. We always love when the Houston Astros beat writer Brian McTaggart is on our program talking about one of the hottest teams in the league right now. Good evening, Brian.
Good evening. How you doing?
Doing fantastic, because I tell you, it has been a sensational season for the Astros. And here we are. We're headed into the month of July. And the Astros, they've got some decisions to make in perhaps adding talent to make a deep run in the postseason. I'd love for you tonight, I invited you on, I want you to provide some insight on who they may be targeting and what areas can the Astros improve upon?
Well, I think it's no surprise they need some pitching and some starting pitching and relief pitching at this point. You know, they've had some starters injured for the last month or 6 weeks, and they're slowly coming back. Lance McCullers is back. It looks like Charlie Morton could be back soon. And then maybe by the end of July, Dallas Keuchel and Colin McHugh, but even still, I think they could use another arm. You know, we've heard the name Jose Quintana all off season and into the season. Sonny Gray of the A's. You know, these are going to be kind of trades that would cost them to give up some pretty good prospects. But you know, at this point, relief pitching I think is as big of an issue. I mean, they have two or three really dependable relievers, and then after that, it's really hit or miss. So right now, if I had to handicap it, I think they add a starter, and I would be shocked if they don't, for certain, add a reliever at some point just to bolster that bullpen.
Mm-hmm. Hey, the Astros beat writer Brian McTaggart back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You just mentioned Dallas Keuchel. Give us an update on him, because he truly has been the best pitcher for the Astros, starting 11 times and posting a 9-0 record.
Yeah, he's been out about a month now with a neck irritation. You know, he was on the DL last month with a pinched nerve in his neck, came back, made a couple of starts, so he's back on the DL, and he will be out to at least after the All-Star break. But, you know, until he gets on the mound and starts throwing bullpens and facing hitters, it's kind of guesswork at this point of where, you know, when he's going to return. Astros are being really conservative with him. I mean, why not? They have a huge lead in the AL West, so
right.
May as well give him as much time as he needs. And, you know, if he comes back in late July or early August, if he's really rested, now you have a guy with a fresh arm really to pitch down the stretch. But they got to make sure he's healthy, first of all, because he came back a little bit too quick last time out when he tried to make that start in Kansas City and couldn't do it. So we just kind of wait and see. It's just kind of on a holding pattern until he starts pitching off the bullpen mound.
That is definitely wise. You know, all the years that you've covered the Astros, how unusual is it for, you know, the pitching to, you know, for them to have to endure so many injuries and for the pitching, really, the rotation to be so fragile?
Yeah, you know, this game is about pitching. You need pitching and defense. The game has turned a little bit more towards offense. I think in the last few years, you know, home runs are up a lot. And the Astros, as we know, bolstered their offense in the offseason. So they have, you know, one of the best offenses in baseball. So they've been able to endure these injuries because they're outscoring opponents in a lot of cases. You know, some guys have stepped up and done a nice job, though. You know, Brad Peacock has come in and pitched pretty well. As he was a long reliever. Mike Fiers, who pitched on a Tuesday night, he's come in and done a nice job after struggling earlier in the year. And, you know, he was booted out of the rotation briefly. But as soon as the other guys got injured, Mike really stepped up and is pitching well. And David Foligno has showed some flashes. But it's pretty rare, I think, to have your top four starters entering the spring all injured at the same time. And that usually can decimate a club, but the Astros got off to such a good start, had this huge lead, and their offense is so good, they're able to overcome it on most nights. And then, you know, they're still getting some good pitching performances mixed in here and there.
Last year, of course, winning 84 games. Brian, we've talked about this in the past, but, I mean, is this where you thought they would be heading into the month of July and talking about, you know, that substantial lead that they have in the AL West?
Well, I mean, I thought they were going to win the division from the get-go. I thought it would be a dogfight between them and the Rangers and the Mariners. And the Mariners, are still really a team to watch in the division. And even though the Astros have this lead, we are, I guess, right now at the halfway point of the season, pretty much. This division race is not over by any means. I mean, I think the Mariners are getting healthier. The Rangers are getting healthier. The Astros need to get healthier and just keep putting the foot on the gas. But I mean, they're sitting in the catbird seat. I mean, they built this huge lead. It's going to be theirs to do what they can with it. You know, rest guys, get them ready. But by the end of July, we should know a lot more. The trade deadline will be over. We should know who's injured, who's not, and then see what kind of lead the Astros have and whether that sets them up nicely for the last 2 months.
The Astros beat writer Brian McTaggart back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Join us at Twitter at eRadio Sports. Brian, connect with our audience, or where can they check out your articles and all your good stuff online?
Yeah, really easy to find. Just go to astros.com and all the, you know, you can do it online or on the MLB at Bat app, and all the articles are right there. Follow me on Twitter at Brian McTaggart. I tweet out all my articles and, you know, do a lot of tweeting during games. So it's a fun place to follow the games.
This has been an amazing season for you. What's it been like to cover the Astros and, you know, just this incredible chemistry that they have in this mix of young, talented players and so many experienced veterans?
Yeah, it's been different. You know, it's been a long few years. You know, they've already won more games this year than they did in the entire 2013 season, and we're only
wow.
at the halfway point of the season. So
oh my gosh.
It shows you how well they're doing
yeah.
and how far they've come, because
right.
that was a complete rebuild process. But, you know, I think their plan has really come together well, where they have this young core of players who is not making a lot of money, and then they added veteran pieces around them this year, Josh Reddick, Brian McCann, Carlos Beltran, and it's all come together pretty perfectly, other than the injuries. But like I said, I mean, they seem to, you know, step around those pretty well, and they have a big lead, so it's allowed them some room for error. But it's been a lot of fun. It's been different, and you know, the ballpark is a little more alive every night. There's more fans, and it's fun when they're scoring a lot of runs, and it's just been a fun team to watch.
Brian, we were talking about the pitching and just all the injuries that you guys have had this season. Do you believe it ultimately holds the key to success or failure for the Astros?
Yeah, I mean, this game is always going to come down to pitching. If you look at the last couple of years, the bullpens, and when you get into the playoffs, use of relief pitchers and bullpens has been monumental. I mean, the Cubs went out and got a couple of guys in trades last year, Chapman and Montgomery, who ended up closing down the World Series for them, guys that weren't even on the roster to start the year. So I think the Astros are going to go to try to get one of those guys. But it's always going to come down to pitching, no matter how much offense you have. If you got a guy that can go out there, shut down the other guy's lineup, then you got the best chance to win, and you got to have that lockdown bullpen as well.
Okay, the Astros beat writer Brian McTaggart back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. One of the things I want to talk about is the 2017 MLB draft, and the Astros select Joe Perez. What's he going to provide?
Well, he was a two-way player in high school in Fort Lauderdale. They drafted him as a infielder, not a pitcher, and he had Tommy John surgery right after they drafted him. So he's a long ways away. He's going to have to start a rehab program in a few months and work his way through the bottom of the minor leagues. He's only 17 years old, so I think it's going to be 4 or 5 years before we see Joe Perez in the big leagues if he progresses. But he's a guy with a lot of upside. Obviously has a great arm, has a good bat because they like the bat more than the arm. That's why they're going to keep him as an infielder, but he's got to make his way through this injury, which is an injury, it can take 8 to 12 months to recover from, but a bat they like and someone they're excited about.
Okay, the Astros host the Yankees tonight, but as we look ahead to the month of July, tell us a little bit about the schedule, what we can anticipate, and how do you see things playing out?
Well, yeah, the Yankees, and then they go on a road trip to Atlanta and Toronto, and then we have the All-Star break. So,
nice.
It looks like the Astros will have at least 3, maybe 4 or 5, maybe 6 All-Stars. And then they come home, and really at the end of the month, they have a big road trip. They go to Baltimore. They go to Philadelphia, which is not a good team. They go to Detroit, which is struggling. We know the Astros play well on the road, but if they can get through that stretch, that tough road stretch, that'll take them right until late July. Trade deadline will be right upon us. I just think that's really kind of a benchmark where you can really see where this club is at. You can gauge the health, you can gauge the record and where they're at, and then you can see who they've acquired and who they haven't acquired. And I think we can get a good idea at that point, in the next 5-6 weeks, what the last 2 months of the season might hold.
Yes, a critical juncture for the Astros season, and this is an exciting time. Always a true pleasure to catch up with Brian McTaggart, the Astros beat writer. Thank you so much, Brian. We'll talk again soon.
All right, sounds good.
You bet. Much more coming your way right here at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back to SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show on this Friday night. It is time now in our next segments. We're going to completely shift gears. We are going to tee it up in southeast Alabama in the beautiful city of Dothan. My family and I, we just returned from one of the most traditionally rich junior golf tournaments in the world, the Future Masters Golf Tournament. And it is a highly anticipated event in Dothan. It is held each and every year at the beautiful Dothan Country Club and features truly the best of the best in junior golf. And very blessed to have both of my sons that had the opportunity to play in it. True pleasure to welcome to our program for the very first time. That is Angela Wade Turner. She is the tournament coordinator for the Future Masters. And Angela, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We're very excited to share with our national audience about this prestigious tournament and provide a full recap. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. This is exciting. I always love any opportunity to brag about the Future Masters, so this is pretty cool.
Well, it was an incredible week of golf. I have to ask you personally, did you recover from such a busy week? Because it was fast, it was furious.
It was. The older you get, the slower it is to bounce back from these things. But I hit my wall yesterday as I was trying to clean up and get things back in order. So hopefully I can take some time off this weekend and enjoy the 4th of July and simmer down some and recoup.
Well, Angela, open up with telling our listeners about this incredible junior golf tournament. It's rich history. It's been going strong for over 68 years.
That's right. This was our 68th year. This tournament was founded in 1950 by Mr. Cress Thornton Sr., and he established the tournament to allow junior boys the opportunity to play against each other and not compete with men and their fathers in tournaments, with just the juniors. So he established this tournament, and it has grown and grown and grown over the years to be one of the most, like you said, traditionally rich and just the largest junior golf tournaments in the world. We have golfers from all over the world that come. This year we played 472 golfers in 1 week on one golf course. The rain hindered us on Tuesday, which was the finals for the younger age group. And we had to cut that short to a 36-hole. Regularly it's a 54-hole. But you just do what you have to do when you run a tournament of this size and you deal with Mother Nature, and God lets us know who's in charge when the rain comes, believe me.
Absolutely. Well, Angela, one thing I would say, too, as a parent that I really appreciated is just how welcome we felt, you know, in our kids. I mean, the community works really hard to make this tournament memorable and so enjoyable for all the participants. And there's so much enthusiasm and support for the golfers. They want these kids to do well.
Exactly. And we're so blessed that our community, they, you know, open their arms to all of our guests, and whether it's in the hotels or the restaurants or any of the attractions. You know, they know that the future Masters contestants and their parents are in town, because it's a big week when you have that many people come into town and take over. Like I said, all of the hotels are busy and the restaurants are busy, and it's just a great time for us to show our true Southern hospitality and to welcome our guests. And you know, like you said, it's so traditionally rich that we've had generations and generations coming here. We've had grandfathers come and bring back their grandsons with their sons. And it's just there's just so much history. It's just really neat to see this growth and to get to meet all the people from all over the world and get to develop relationships with them.
You are listening to the voice of Angela Wade Turner. She is the tournament coordinator for the Future Masters. It was the 68th annual Press Thornton Future Masters that is held in beautiful Dothan, Alabama. And, you know, Angela, for all the years that you've been involved with this tournament, what do you enjoy the most?
I think just getting to see the people from year after year. Like I said, we get to develop relationships with people. My husband is a volunteer. He's a rules official. And when he, several years ago, he got to be a 10 and under scorer for Blaine Barber, who is now on the PGA Tour.
Cool.
And we have watched Blaine grow up, become a husband and a father and on the PGA Tour. And it's just so neat to develop those relationships with people like that, and to follow these kids and see their throughout their college years, and then so many go on to play on the PGA Tour, and it's just neat to be able to follow them and watch them grow in the game of golf.
You know, Angela, you had just mentioned that over 470 golfers participated. How many of those former competitors, you know, throughout the years, you just mentioned one, have gone on to the PGA Tour level? Because this does have a rich history. When you start talking about, one of the rules officials was telling me about Lucas Glover and of course, Harris English and Stuart Sink.
Mm-hmm. We have Stuart Sink won here in 1990 and 91. He was one of our few two-time champions, and we have 100 or so on the PGA Tour now playing. You know, like I said, when you go back and you look at the history, I mean, all the way back, you know, to Gary Cope, Charles Howell, Billy Horschel, Russell Henley, Brian Gay, Bubba Watson, Bob Tway,
wow.
Hudson Swafford, Curtis Strange, Heath Slocum, Brent Snedeker, Chip Beck, Mark Brooks, Andy Bean, Paul Azinger. And I could just, you know, go on and on and on with the names that have played here, and now they are on the PGA Tour.
What do you remember about Bubba Watson when he played? Could he strike it as well as he does today? I mean, he is the ultimate ball striker.
He did. He was a strong player, and he had long sideburns. I would always remember that. He had really long sideburns, and it was. And Bubba was from our neck of the woods, as we say here, not too far from Dothan, in Bad Dag, Florida, close to Pensacola. So, you know, he was kind of one of us and fit in well here. But he was a character.
Angela Wade Turner with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We'd love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at E Radio Sports. You can always go back and email the show at info@eradiosports.com. And twice is nice. That's right. You can listen to our entire interview at podcastarena.com. So tell us, what is the goal of the Future Masters Tournament each and every year? Because it really, Angela, it's not just about playing the game of golf, but it is about the spirit of competition and the friendships that are made and the sportsmanship on the course.
That's exactly right. And that, like I said, that's why Mr. Thornton developed this tournament, was to give the boys an opportunity to play. And it's, you know, we do this one time a year. I really compare the future Masters to the Masters in Augusta, which we have their blessing to use the Masters name.
Wonderful.
We do have to use a blue navy jacket instead of a green jacket, but there's a lot of similarities to Augusta and Masters and Bethune Country Club and the future Masters. And, you know, we give these kids the opportunity to grow their game and to be able to play golf, you know, the rest of their life, whether they do it with the competition on the PGA Tour or whether they're a PGA player or just playing golf in business and developing friendships and relationships. And, you know, we have a lot of people that travel that are from Dothan, and people will ask them, you know, where are you from? And if it's in the golf industry, most people know the Future Masters and Dothan Country Club and go, I played in that when I was 15 or whatever. And, you know, it's just neat to see the growth of this tournament over the years. And, you know, we do no advertising. It's wonderful parents like you that spread the tournament, and we
get
150 or 200 on a waiting list every year.
Well, another year is in the history books for the future Masters, but quickly do a recap of how things played out in the 15 to 18-year-old division. 16-year-old Thomas Ponder, how cool is this? He is from Dothan, Alabama, and he came out on top.
Mm-hmm. He's only the fourth Dothanite to win in the 68-year history. Of course, our first one, Dr. Don Kennington, won in 1950, and then we've had two others, and now Thomas is our fourth one to win from Dothan here. So that was pretty cool to watch him and to see him win.
Angela, when you and the committee, you guys get together in the off season, do you talk a lot about the state of junior golf and how to grow the game? Because we have had guests on my show and they're talking about how golf is on the decline. You know, they need to simplify a little bit more because people don't have time to be out on the golf course. Where do you see the state of the game right now, and specifically with junior golf? Because there is just incredible parity out there. And I mean, these kids are just fantastic.
Yeah, they are. Like, you know, we have a 10 and under age group, which we have caddies that go with them. They play nine holes one day and then nine holes the next day. And, you know, these kids are phenomenal. They're shooting, you know, par and better.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're little bitty things. The clubs are longer than they are.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing to see them. And, you know, we have 150 or so on a waiting list every year. And, you know, I think that just because of the way that the hospitality and the way the community has embraced the tournament, you know, people want to come back because it's so parent-friendly and family-friendly. You know, the parents, they can go enjoy and watch their kids. And we're so close to the beaches of the Gulf of Mexico that, you know, people take vacations. So they come play a few days of golf. Then they head down south to the beaches. And, you know, it's a good family time. So, you know, I hope that golf can continue to grow and that we can continue to do this for many, many years because it's a passion. Our volunteers and our people involved love it, and it's not about the money or making money for anything, because all the money goes back to the country club for improvements to the golf course for the next year's tournament. So it's just a neat experience to be a part of this and to be involved with the Thornton family. Who Dr. Thornton is our general chairman.
Yes.
The son of Mr. Press Thornton. You know, all his children and his grandchildren are involved in the tournament and participate in different events. So it's just a really neat experience to be involved in something of this magnitude.
And the timing of the event on Father's Day weekend, I mean, how perfect is that?
Yeah, this was our second year in the last couple of years that we've been on Father's Day. And like I said, we've had grandfathers return with their sons and their grandsons, and all three have played in the Future Masters.
Wow.
So they can share those memories and they can talk about when they were little, when they played, and then you see the grandsons look at them, you know, in awe of their ability. So it's pretty neat.
It is an amazing tournament. That's right. We are celebrating the 68th annual Press Thornton Future Masters that took place in beautiful Dothan, Alabama, going one-on-one with Angela Wade Turner, the tournament coordinator, who does an amazing job. Congratulations, continued success, and we hope to see you next year out there in Dothan, Alabama. Thank you, Angela.
Thank you very much.
Of course. Much more coming your way at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. You stay close.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Welcome back to the next generation of sports radio at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. So excited to kick off our next segment as it has been a very busy week in the NBA. The Phil Jackson era is finally over in New York, and Chris Paul is headed to H-Town, to Houston, and we're also going to take some time for some NBA MVP talk. Always a true pleasure to have back with us from Sirius XM NBA Radio, that is the great Mitch Lawrence. Good evening, Mitch.
Hi, Alyssa. How are you today?
Wow, catching my breath because it has been a tremendous week, very fast and furious. You are in New York, so let's start there. Were you surprised at the timing of Phil Jackson's departure?
Absolutely. But this is a Jim Dolan special, of course. James Dolan is the chairman of Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
And anytime he makes moves, they always come out of the blue. Only 4 months ago, he talked about Phil Jackson in terms of Phil's going to be here for the final 2 years of his contract. Even though the team is losing, he's fine with that. He thought Phil would fulfill those two final years. And here we are 4 months later, and he pulls the trap door on Phil. And, you know, there are a lot of problems here. I mean, Carmelo Anthony and Phil were having a public feud, and then Phil got into a verbal firefight publicly with Kristaps Porzingis. On the eve of the draft, there were reports that Phil was falling asleep in these workouts, not with more than one. My sources told me that there were several workouts he attended to watch the draft prospects work out, and he was falling asleep. So I think all that stuff, the losing, the problems with Carmelo, and Jim Dolan's a Carmelo fave. He made the deal to bring Carmelo to town. The problems with Porzingis, and then Dolan wondering if Phil was really kind of fit to continue the job. I think that added up, and yeah, it was a surprise. But these always are when Phil Jackson, Jim Dolan has made moves in the past. He's fired and hired people, you know, 2 or 3 days before Christmas. So you can never say never.
So who do you think, Mitch, is the best replacement for Phil Jackson?
Well, I hope for Jim Dolan's sake he learned a lesson and he hires somebody who's actually done the job before. You know, one of the things when Phil was hired, I wrote and I said at the time, well, it's great that Phil has a big name with Knicks fans and he brings in 11 rings, you know, from his days with the Bulls and the Lakers. The guy's never done the job before. He coached great teams. He never built great teams. So I hope this is a case where Jim Dolan learns from this mistake that he's made. It's been 3 years of just one disaster and after another with Phil, and goes out and gets himself a proven GM and president. Now, he's talking about, the word is that the Knicks want to bring in Masai Ujiri, which is great.
Right.
He's up in Toronto. The problem is he's under contract, so that's going to cost a lot. You hear the name David Griffin, maybe from Cleveland. Either of those guys, I think, would be great because, let's face it, they've done the job before. They've worked in some pressure cooker situations, especially David Griffin, obviously in Cleveland. So I think what Knicks fans have to hope for is that Jim Dolan's done it with the experiment of bringing in just a big name for the sake of having a big name and winning the press conference, as they say, and he goes out and he gets himself a proven, you know, guy who can build a team, an executive who knows other people in the league and works hard and doesn't fall asleep when he's got draft prospects coming in to work out.
Hey, we are so glad you're with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Connect with us at Twitter at eRadio Sports. You can always email the show at info@eradiosports.com and podcastarena.com. We are going one-on-one with Mitch Lawrence, a tremendous source. You can catch him on Sirius XM NBA Radio and all of his columns at Sporting News and Forbes.com. Okay, as we zero in on the Knicks, what do you think this ultimately means for Carmelo Anthony? I'm going to assume, I mean, this is a good thing, right?
Yes, still wanted to trade him. No doubt about that. But, you know, one of Phil's biggest mistakes, and he made a bunch in New York, one of the big ones was when he re-signed Carmelo Anthony in 2014 to a near-max deal. It was about $125 million. He put in there a no-trade clause for Carmelo Anthony. And Carmelo Anthony has the power, and he's been wielding that. And that really messed up with Phil's rebuilding plans because Phil wanted to move Carmelo on his merry way, and Carmelo was digging it. Every time there was a verbal firefight in public where Phil was, you know, getting on Carmelo, let me tell you something, Carmelo would exercise that no-trade clause. And so, you know, now I think Carmelo, he could still get a buyout, perhaps, but I think now he's probably going to be willing to see who the Knicks bring in to rebuild the team. He really loves it here. You got to remember, Carmelo Anthony came to New York in 2011. He forced his way here from Denver. Jim Dolan helped make the deal, and they're close. And Carmelo loves being in New York. He's undergoing a family situation now where he was separated from his wife. He's very close, obviously, to his son, Kyan, who's a guy who's a young basketball player. And so he wants to be local and close to his son. And so that takes precedence over everything else that's going on in the Garden with the Knicks, whether there's a lot of losing or not. So I think you might see Carmelo Anthony here. If he doesn't get bought out to go to Cleveland and join LeBron James's buddy, I think you could see Carmelo staying here for the next couple of years.
Okay, so let's talk about rebuild, because a ton of coaches have come and gone during Phil Jackson's time with the Knicks. What, a total of, I think it's four. So who do you think would be the best man for the job? I mean, what about, I've heard the name out there floating around, Mark Jackson. Why not?
Well, the fans would want Mark Jackson, there's no doubt about it. But Mark had a rough time at Golden State. And when Mark was fired by Golden State before they hired Steve Kerr, after that you heard all these stories that came out that Mark couldn't get along with players, he couldn't get along with his bosses, executive owners, you name it. So it depends. First of all, I would assume that the Knicks and Jim Dolan are going to hire, whether it's Messiah, Jerry, David Griffin, or someone else, and then that person will have to make a determination on Jeff Hornacek's future, because Jeff Hornacek has, I think, a year or two left on his deal. Mark Jackson's name, like I said, very big with the fans here, played here. He's from New York. He went to St. John's. But whether it's New York or any other team, Melissa, he's going to have to answer a lot of questions about why he had so many problems in Golden State dealing with people. And we'll see. I mean, you know, it's interesting. We're all hoping Mark gets another job. But no matter, you know, who it is, where it is, those are the questions that are going to come up he's going to have to answer.
Do you think we've seen the last of Phil Jackson in the NBA? I mean, let's be honest, this is a young man's game, and as you had said, you can't be dozing off during players' workouts.
Well, Phil's 71. He's not in the greatest of health. That's what you always heard all along. Now, granted, you didn't see a lot or hear a lot from Phil during the season, kept his media sessions to a, you know, real minimum, like two over the last 10 or 11 months or whatever. Yeah, I mean, look, he's made a ton of money here in New York. He signed a five-year deal for $60 million. I don't know what the buyout's going to be at $24 million left, but needless to say, he's made a ton of money, so he doesn't have to work anymore. He has generational wealth. I would tend to say, you know what, he probably is the last you'll see of him because, you know, one of the reasons Phil, there was always a clamor in New York for Phil to coach, but Phil physically couldn't deal with the coaching aspect, and he can't do the GM job. We know that. That's just, he's not cut out for it. The work, all that entails. And so if you can't physically coach and he's not cut out to be the GM, I think we have seen the last of him. And, you know, he's still an icon when it comes to being a, you know, one of the all-time great NBA coaches. But as an executive, I don't think anybody would hire him now.
Mm-hmm. How much do you think this tarnishes his legacy?
Well, yeah, when you talk about Phil, I mean, you're going to have to now, there's a division. I mean, you're going to talk about him as an executive. He bombed. There's no other way around it. He's weighing over his head, just didn't get the job done for various reasons. We mentioned the Carmelo Anthony mistake with the no-trade clause. He also had a very bad signing with Joakim Noah. That turned into a first-rate disaster. That's now an albatross on the Knicks' cap. Okay, once you in there and then you talk about Phil's coaching, well, that's something else. Here's a guy who won 11 rings. Nobody else has done more than that, not even Red Auerbach. And he coached, you know, Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal and had great success in Los Angeles. Got their careers turned around for those guys. They had never won big until Phil got there. And then, obviously, starting out with Michael Jordan and being the great coach on the Chicago Bulls, those are the type of things that nobody will ever forget. Does this tarnish his overall legacy? Yeah, I guess you'd have to say, but I think people are going to still remember him as a Mount Rushmore coaching icon more than an NBA executive.
Mitch Lawrence back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You can check him out, SiriusXM NBA Radio. Now, the other big headline this week, the blockbuster move with Chris Paul headed to our city. That's right, Houston. Rocket fans are very excited. They're going to love it. But what was your initial reaction when you heard the news?
Wow.
Yeah.
Like everybody else. My jaw hit the floor.
Heard he was coming, possibly, potentially?
Well, you heard, you know what, Houston, here's the thing. In the lead-up to free agency and everything, we've heard that Chris Paul, if he wasn't going to go back to L.A. for over $200 million to be with the Clippers, he might take a trip, a recruiting visit to San Antonio. They were going to have to make a lot of moves to that roster to make that work. Or you heard the name Houston. And, you know, it's funny, Alyssa, a lot of people were telling me, well, how is that going to ever work with James Harden? You know, you have two ball dominant guards who both need the rock, and they gotta
exactly.
You know, they gotta be the guys. And my reply was, I see what you're saying. On paper, it looks weird and crazy and won't work. But don't forget, Mike D'Antoni is an offensive genius. The guy's a mastermind. So if anybody can make this thing work, I'd put it in the hands of Mike D'Antoni. Because after all, Mike D'Antoni, you know, made Steve Nash into a two-time MVP. It had a lot to do with his success. He's been great. Was great with Jeremy Lin. Jeremy Lin, since he's, you know, played for Mike D'Antoni, I know he's been hurt a lot, but he hasn't been the same player. He made a starter out of a backup named Chris Duhon years ago. You know, Mike's had tremendous success, and you saw what he did with James Harden this past season. So if anybody can make it work, it's going to be Mike. I just don't know if he has the answer right now, but I'll bet you he's already starting to diagram things in his very, very fertile offensive mind as to how to get this thing to work.
And from what I understand, I mean, the reports were that Chris Paul and James Harden, they were determined. They wanted to play together, and they found a way to make it happen. So,
well, you know what? James Harden flamed out last year, as we saw in the playoffs against San Antonio, and I'm sure he probably feels like, you know what, I can't have that again. I got to get my, you know, he needs to start winning big. He didn't, you know, he's been to a conference finals with Houston. Then last year against San Antonio, did not end well in that second round series. So I'm sure he's open to that. And I think for Chris Paul, it's time to move on from L.A. I mean, Chris Paul did a great job regular season-wise. The Clippers had never had the sustained success in the regular season that they had under Chris Paul in their history. I mean, we know about it. They were a laughingstock before he got there. But playoff-wise, once again, Chris Paul couldn't get them out of the second round, had that unbelievably bad, monumental collapse against Houston back in 15, I believe it was, when they had that series all but locked up and couldn't close out the Rockets. And then, you know, getting bounced in the first round lately, okay, they've had problems keeping Blake Griffin healthy. But that all falls on Chris Paul's resume, and that's on his record. And so what he has to do is he's got to get deeper in the playoffs because people consider him an elite point guard. You can't really be an elite point guard or elite player unless you get to an NBA Finals and start winning. And so I think that's probably why he decided, you know what, time was up in L.A.
Is this ultimately, though, a good deal for the Clippers? Their package includes Patrick Beverley, Sam Decker, Lou Williams, and a 2018 first-round selection. What does this do for the Clippers?
Well, you know what? The Clippers reached a point because of their playoff failure where they had to make a decision. They had to really blow things up. I mean, as much as Doc Rivers talked about these guys have built a legacy, there's not much of a legacy in terms of their playoff records. And I'm talking about Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan. So, yes, I think for the Clippers, you get something for Chris Paul, you move on, you rebuild, you retool. Now Jerry West is in your front office. He's helping calling the shots with Doc Rivers and for the owner, Steve Ballmer. So it was time to move on. It's time to blow it up. It's time to rebuild. And the first move you had to make was really part ways with Chris Paul. So let's see what they do in Clipperland as they build against the Lakers, who are right down the hallway in Staples Center. That's going to be very interesting. Could the Clippers be involved with LeBron James after this coming season? We'll see. Everybody's talking about him for the Lakers, but Clippers have a lot of work to do now, and the first move that had to be made, they made it with Chris Paul.
Okay, let's shift gears. Mitch Lawrence with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Just a few more minutes. Russell Westbrook wins the 2016-2017 MVP. Did he deserve the hardware?
I did. I think he definitely deserved it. Look, I know James Harden had a phenomenal year. And we're not talking about playoffs here. Everybody has to remember it's just regular season. But, you know, the Rockets won 55 games, which is a very good year for them, but it's not an exceptional year. And they weren't first or second. They were third in the West. And, you know, Oklahoma City, if James Harden doesn't have all those triple-doubles, and they went 33-9, by the way, in the games where he had triple-doubles. But he basically had to have triple-doubles to get them to drag that team to the playoffs.
The NBA conversation continues with SiriusXM NBA radio host Mitch Lawrence after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back inside SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. We're going to continue our conversation, our NBA news and notes, with Mitch Lawrence from SiriusXM NBA Radio. Russell Westbrook wins the 2016-2017 MVP. Did he deserve the hardware?
I did. I think he definitely deserved it. Look, I know James Harden had a phenomenal year. And we're not talking about playoffs here. Everybody has to remember it's just regular season. But, you know, the Rockets won 55 games, which is a very good year for them, but it's not an exceptional year. And they weren't first or second. They were third in the West. And, you know, Oklahoma City, if James Harden doesn't have all those triple-doubles, And they went 33-9, by the way, in the games where he had triple-doubles. But he basically had to have triple-doubles to get them to drag that team to the playoffs. He didn't have as much to work with as James Harden. The way I look at it is that Russell Westbrook did more with less.
Yeah. Are you surprised that the MVP, it doesn't factor in playoff success? Because when we talk about Westbrook, Harden, and Kawhi Leonard, they weren't in the finals.
Well, you know, that's just the way it shook out this year. I mean, you know, we
should
could always vote
that?
For LeBron James. Durant and Curry obviously kind of split the votes maybe within, you know, people thinking about Golden State. Plus, Durant was hurt. My only problem, and this just goes to, I love the NBA award show. You probably did too.
Oh, yeah.
But really, when Kawhi Leonard is up for an MVP, he needs to be in New York. I mean, I thought that was a mistake. I hope the league, speaking of that, I
addresses
hope the league
that.
Moves that award
mm-hmm.
to make it right after the regular season on the eve of the playoffs. How great would that be?
Absolutely.
To crown your people right there like a Russell Westbrook and then kickstart the playoffs. I think that would be a big bang going into the playoffs in the future.
Well, there was outpouring support for Russell Westbrook, Mr. Triple-Double, and his MVP season. It truly was amazing. Last question for you is, what do you think was going through Kevin Durant's mind when he was watching his former teammate and close friend win the MVP?
Well, I think he released a statement saying he was happy for him.
He did.
I think Kevin Durant's in a great place. You know, he goes out to Golden State. He's the finals MVP, which is, of course, a lot of people consider the big MVP when you're doing it on the final stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? He didn't ride anybody's coattails to the title. He was the star of the series. He outplayed LeBron James. So I'm sure he's thinking everything is great. And for Russell Westbrook, I'm sure he's very happy for him. And we all know there are problems between the two. They might be exaggerated, but I think at this point in his life, Kevin Durant, all is good.
He is simply the best. Mitch Lawrence, SiriusXM NBA Radio. Check him out online, Sporting News and Forbes.com. Thank you so much, Mitch. A true pleasure.
Thanks, E. Thanks for having me.
You bet.